The 1850s were a time of reform in America, and women were in the front ranks of the reformers. Harriet Tubman led hundreds of slaves to freedom. Dorothea Dix worked for humane treatment of the insane. Susan B. Anthony pressed for women's rights. And Ellen White broke with custom by speaking in public. And in 1853, in Bucksbridge, New York, a 19-year-old woman made her mark in Adventist education. She was Martha Byington, the daughter of John Byington, a depot operator on the Underground Railroad.
I suppose this isn't exactly a good supper table topic, but I was over at Uncle Aaron Hilliard's today when little Eddie came home from school.
What's so bad about that, Martha?
He was crying as though his heart would break, Fletcher. The other children had been teasing him unmercifully all day because he goes to church on Saturday.
All the Adventist children suffer such taunts and ridicule. It's a terrible shame.
I know how hard it can be, Mother. I remember how the other children taunted me at school because we entertain Indians and people of color in our home. Why should Adventist children have to go to school at all? Jesus is coming very soon.
Well, until he does, son, we have to be prepared to live on this earth. Besides, if children learn to read and reason, well, they can study the Bible truths for themselves, and they'll be prepared to give an answer for their faith.
That's true, John, but I still wish they didn't have to go to public school.
You've given me an idea, dear. I think there are enough Adventist children around here that we could start our own school. That way, they could have Bible lessons every day along with the three R's.
Oh, yes. There are several Adventist families here. My two brothers, Aaron and Henry, the Pennoyers, the Crosbys, and the Pecks. But who would we get to teach?
I'll do it.
Martha Byington taught the first SDA school in the Aaron Hilliard home, with just over a dozen students. In 1854, the school was taught by Lucinda Payne, and in 1855, by Martha's brother, John Fletcher Byington. Church headquarters were established in Battle Creek late in 1855, and Fletcher apparently moved there after the school term to work in the review office. It must have been late in 1857, or early 1858, when he was called to an interview with James White.
Brother Byington? I understand that teaching is your business of choice.
Oh, yes, sir. I've never received more satisfaction from any work I've done.
Good. As you know, Mrs. White and I have both written about the need for parents to protect their children from the influences of the world.
I've read the articles very carefully.
Many parents have taught their children at home, and a number of the churches have operated schools like the one you taught. In fact, the Battle Creek Church has decided to open one, and we'd like you to teach it.
Why, that's, impressive.
You're quite right to be hesitant, young man. Previous attempts here haven't been notably successful. Sister Osgood taught a home school for a year at the same time you were teaching, I believe.
So I've heard.
Then Sister Mary Louise Morton had a try, and Brother Robert Holland ran a school for a couple of years. Unfortunately, his discipline was apparently too lax, and many of the parents failed to pay the tuition fees.
Yes, sir, and that's why, although I love teaching...
Have no fear, Brother Byington. This time, the church itself intends to pay your salary.
In that case, sir, I'd be delighted to accept your offer.
But this time, the parents complained that discipline was too strict, and after a couple of years, the school lapsed again. In 1858, the rest of the Byington family moved to Battle Creek, where in 1860, Martha married George Amidon, foreman in the publishing house and editor of the Youth's Instructor. When the denomination was organized in 1860, with Martha's father, John Byington, as the first president, the church leaders made no provision for developing an education program. The next small step was taken in 1867, when a master teacher appeared in Battle Creek, and young people took matters into their own hands.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, young man. What may I do for you?
My name's Edson White. I'm a typesetter at the review office. I saw you sawing wood for the boiler, and I wanted to meet you.
How do you do, Mr. White? My name's Bell, Goodloe Harper Bell.
How do you do, Mr. Bell?
Is it your ambition to remain a typesetter?
Oh, no, sir. I want to be a printer or a publisher. I also enjoy writing, but I don't think I'll ever write because I hate grammar.
Hate grammar? Why, young man, grammar, properly taught, is one of the most interesting studies in the world.
You sound like a teacher.
I've been a teacher for about 15 years, ever since I was 19. About your age, I'd say.
Well, pretty close. Yes, I'm 18. Johnny Kellogg wants to be a teacher. He wants to go to college, too, but he's sick a lot, so I don't think he'll be able to. Did you go to college?
I attended Oberlin College, an excellent school. The first coeducational school in the country.
I've heard Brother George Amidon talk about it in the printing office. He went there.
I wasn't there as long as I should like to have been, but I learned enough to make a good living as a teacher at some of the best schools in Michigan.
I didn't know teachers made good money.
In some places they can. I learned a number of principles at Oberlin that were similar to those held by the Adventists. It made me more receptive to the third angel's message when I came here.
Which principles do you mean?
Well, a vegetarian diet was followed, and so were other health principles that agree with what your mother has taught.
Is that why you came here?
No. After my wife's death last year, I became dyspeptic. All I wanted to do was to restore my health. I was determined not to change my religion again. I'd already converted from the Baptists to the Disciples in my youth.
What changed your mind?
My roommate at the Health Institute was Brother Osborne. Every night, when he thought I was asleep, he prayed for me, aloud. Now, after a while, I could no longer resist what I knew to be the truth.
Is that why you're still here?
Well, I'm not fully recovered yet. I'm still staying at the Health Institute. Well, this job of sawing wood helps both my health and my pocketbook. After all, I have three little girls to support. And I do miss teaching, though.
Well, until you can get back to teaching in a real school, would you perhaps consider teaching me and a few of my friends? Oh, we could use some help on grammar and mathematics.
I'd be glad to help you out. Hello, young Mr. White. Won't you come in? And who are all these young men with you?
Well, I've brought you 14 scholars, Mr. Bell. Oh, this is my brother, Willie.
Hi.
Johnny Kellogg.
Hello.
His brother, Will.
Nice to meet you.
George States. Homer Aldrich.
14? Oh, these are the few friends you told me about?
Yes. And we're all ready for school.
G.H. Bell taught first in a room in the old North Lodge. But as his reputation for excellent teaching grew, the room seemed to shrink. He had to find new quarters.
This is the building I told you about, Brother Bell. The original review office and print shop. And it doesn't look like much now because we've been using it as a dumping ground for cast-off items since we moved to our new building.
I'm sure I can move out enough things to make a room for a class, Brother Smith.
Well, there are two floors, you know. If you want, you and your daughters could live downstairs and you could hold classes upstairs. How does that sound?
It sounds like an excellent idea.
Brother Bell, the parents of the Battle Creek Church have become aware of your outstanding abilities as a teacher. Because of this, the church has voted to ask you to conduct a school for us at a moderate salary. Will you accept?
I will, brother, and thank you.
We're so privileged to have a teacher of Brother Bell's caliber here in Battle Creek.
That's true. It's only because he joined the church that we have the benefit of his skills. We could never have paid a salary to match what he received at public institutions.
Whatever salary he demanded would be worthwhile. I can't tell you how happy we've been over the change in our Andrew since he started going to school, to Mr. Bell. Why, Andy actually enjoys studying now, and he's so well-behaved.
Or merely intimidated. If my Harold is terrified of the man. I think Mr. Bell is far too strict.
I've heard the same from other parents. I wonder if we've made a mistake. After all, he came here in poverty, practically a beggar. Who knows what sort of creature he may be?
That's nonsense. Mr. Bell is a godsend, an educator par excellence, and so I've told him. I can't believe he'd ever do anything wrong.
After one term, the church decided the cost of a teacher's salary was too great. So Bell operated his school as a private venture. Evidently, tuition proved difficult to collect. And when the impoverished Bell was offered the position of youth's instructor editor in May 1869, he gladly accepted, closing his school. Other responsibilities were heaped upon him. He was appointed superintendent of the Battle Creek Sabbath School and a director of the Health Institute, became a Sabbath school consultant for other churches, and in 1870 was elected General Conference treasurer. With the loss of Bell as a teacher, a Seventh-day Adventist educational system seemed a distant dream.